This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to go over some news from the past week. Then we're going to delve into some Gen Con coverage now that we have the complete stats. And we're going to follow it up with a discussion about some of the key cards that people have been talking about that should be addressed with the next FAQ. Finally, we'll have some closing comments about some upcoming tournaments. All right, John, episode 30. What do we say about episode 30?
I don't know. What's the 30th anniversary?
Oh, there's a thing there, right? Silvers, platinums, golds. I don't know how any of that works. I should probably eventually read into that.
Yeah, you're going to need to know at some point. 30 is pretty important, I think.
30-year anniversary is a long way off. I think I can get away with not knowing that one for a while. So I'd like to start the episode with a couple of corrections to our last episode. The first was, John, you were saying that Kid was at your final table, Dan Seafelt, and it turns out that that was actually Wilson Knight who won the table that he was at. And
but that's not fair. They're clones. They're basically the same person. They're both from D.C. I mean, there's only like 8 people that live there, right? Like Eric Butzloff, Kid, Dan, and the rest of their meta.
There we go. he's definitely D.C. your peripheral. But yeah, that was Wilson Knight.
Yeah, I get confused easily. Sorry, Wilson.
Thing that I think we mentioned, we were talking a little bit on whether they'll have to make a statement as to whether the draft cards are legal. And I'm told, I don't remember this from last year around Worlds, but when they released the chapter packs last time, they were cards from the next 2 chapter packs, and they specifically stated that they would not be legal and that was the default policy, and that's the policy in Netrunner. So I suspect that that's the setting here. The reason I don't remember this really is because the last draft set was released around Worlds, and then you had December, January, where nobody's playing any of the organized play tournaments, so it didn't really matter for official organized play. But,
right.
You know, in this case, it probably does. We've got Worlds on the horizon.
So that's it for corrections. There's a bunch of news that came out this week. FFG finally announced, for instance, its 2014 World Championship schedule, which looks just hugely jam-packed, and I think they're expecting a lot of people this year because you can see, for instance, the X-Wing World Champion starts on Thursday and doesn't end until Saturday because they do multiple flights once again for X-Wing. So both on Thursday and on Friday they have X-Wing. Which probably means that that game is just doing great.
Oh, yeah, it's forming a huge percentage of their sales. In the in-flight reports from last year and from this year, you can see the minis slice of the pie just exploding. I think it was like 15%, and now it's like 40% of their business, or of their product mix, whatever that means. They don't actually tell you.
I have to say, just looking at the game, it's so gorgeous, I almost want to play.
I do actually own the minis. I rarely get a chance to play, but even just for having the X-Wing minis on my desk, filling out a fantasy I've had for a long, long time.
That's one weird fantasy, Alex.
since I first saw, you know, the movies, you're always thinking you want those, and they're very well painted. The game itself is quite fun, but it's not my competitive game of choice. That would be Game of Thrones, which is actually being spread out also over 3 days, although the melee is on Thursday, the Joust Swiss rounds are on Friday, and then the cut is on Saturday.
Which is so good. I mean, at Gen Con, after playing for like 8 and some hours in the Swiss, by the time we started the cut, I was tired. By the time we got to the final game, like almost 16 hours later, I was like barely able to talk. I was so beat.
Yeah, it's a pretty grueling affair at Gen Con, just like the year before, which was one less Swiss round, actually. But same sort of idea. It's really rough. However, there is something someone has mentioned that I think is worth bearing in mind, and that's that if the tournament is broken down like that, you're pretty much guaranteed that you'll know the house and agenda and quite possibly the restricted of everyone else in the cut. And that might change how you play, or it might change how you design your deck going in, knowing that you can't get away with those surprise cards in the same way that you necessarily can. But, you know, that doesn't greatly change things, because typically you'll have bumped into these people before in the Swiss rounds, the last Swiss rounds of the tournament anyway, and so on. So I don't think it's back or game-breaking, but it's something to keep in mind.
I mean, I would have loved that kind of information in my final game at Gen Con. I opened with the fear of him having a certain plot, because I just assumed most players would have it. I don't think he actually had it in his deck, his plot deck. So, I mean, that type of information can definitely change people's, how they're going to play after the cut. But everyone has that same advantage.
Well, it depends, because, is it scouting at that point when the tournament's the next day and you're asking around what people were playing? It probably is.
Yeah, that's sticky, though, because it's tough, because everyone's going to be talking about their games. Like, you're going to be over beers, everyone's going to be like, oh, I played so-and-so, and we had this match, and this was cool, and I saw this. And is it scouting because you're having beers with these people after the game, or having a pizza with them, and they mention this stuff? Like, I think it's scouting if you start asking specific questions, but if they say, you know, I played this really cool Martell no agenda, but he fear wintered me turn one, and I wasn't expecting that from Martell, and you're like, oh, this is one of the people I'm going to see in the cut, but, like, that's tough.
Like, yeah, I mean, that can happen in the Swiss rounds as well. So, you know, I don't think this is necessarily a new problem, but I think that if you finish your Swiss rounds and you know that you're first and you know who 16th is, it's really hard not to think, how am I going to play that matchup? You know, what are some tricks? Maybe I should practice the Martell no agenda matchup tonight with my roommate and get a feel for it.
Yeah, and you might, I guess.
And again, that's if you know that he's Martell no agenda and he knows what you are. Well, the information's even, and you don't know any more about his deck, and you practice against a couple different versions of Martell no agenda. Fair enough, but I don't know. It may bring in a different dynamic to the cut, and that's something I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I think it definitely will. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You'll have to be sending texts my way all day long.
Texts? I don't have a phone. I probably won't have internet access there. I'll send smoke signals or carrier pigeons. It'll be great.
Smoke signals, say, that'll be great. I'll be on my roof with a spyglass looking the
fantastic.
How far it is.
I mean, they haven't announced any of the side events. We know that they're going to be talking at Worlds about what they're going to do for constraining the card pool, you know, the rotation discussion, which hasn't been talked about at all in Gen Con. I'm expecting news for most of their products, you know, things like that. I was a little disappointed in that I was hoping to get my feet wet in the 40K Conquest game, just for sort of inaugural tournament when the card pool's small, the investment to get into the game isn't all that much. That had been a different time, then I'd definitely have looked into playing it, even if I wasn't going to pick it up as a long-term game, because it's fairly approachable when the card pool's so small. But it's right during the Joust Swiss rounds, so that's not going to happen.
Looks like a good game. I hear the rules are really good. I don't like Warhammer 40K, so it's going to be really tough for me to be that interested in it.
Right, exactly. You know, I think Games Workshop has probably beaten 40K to death over the last, 30 years now?
Yeah, and even when I played Games Workshop, I enjoyed the fantasy battles more than the 40K by far, so.
There is other news, though. We're recording a little bit early, so I can't actually tell you what the results of the German National with the German card pool were, but that's a big deal because I think the winner of that gets to go to Worlds, so that's relevant. But I can tell you what won the Joust in the Fleabottom Fracas in Poland, and that was a Lannister Dark Wings Dark Words with Castellan of the Rock.
Oh, then I think we do have information on the German. I think it was a Bera the Masterpath one.
Okay, so we do know what that one is. I also want to mention then that the Polish meta as a whole has been phenomenal. If you've seen the alternate art cards that they've done over the last couple of years and the ones they did for this year, they're just stellar. But just as the tournament wrapped up, the tournament organizer sent, and I uploaded it to the Beyond the Wall Facebook page, a bonus prize that they hadn't told anyone about. They took a picture of everyone there, and then they printed it out onto a card stock with the words Meta Pride and, you know, the 402 and the text and everything. But there is now, you know, a Meta Pride that has all the attendees. And yeah, that's just really cool as a sort of sign off, take a picture of everyone, a really good memento, I think. So I think they've outdone themselves again. I think their alternate art cards were some of the most stellar last year. They've kept that up and they've just gone a step further. The playmats this year and this Men of Pride card is just awesome. Really, really good prize support. There was a tournament in France, the Dijon Open, that was supposed to be quite big, but I don't know if the results have been posted yet. Let me double check. So Noyo won, and Noyo was playing Targ. So I don't know what deck he was playing. That's all I got, sorry. But check out the annals. That data will be uploaded. The French are pretty good about getting their data in a way that I can get it into the annals. What else do we have in the realm of news, John?
I think those are all the big news items. I think the big item is, you know, if you're going to Worlds, plan now, book your time. Thursday, it's a little strange that they decided to do once again this Thursday instead of pushing some out to Sunday, making people take that extra day off work. I mean, they seem to have this big slot on Sunday. Why not, you know, do Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
We will know more once they post more of a schedule.
Yeah.
I did have one last item of news, actually. The Octagon tournament will already have started by the time you hear this, so this is more a kind of haha, you missed it piece of news. Maybe not particularly informative, but we did try to announce it over the last couple of casts and on our Facebook page. So as of Sunday the 24th, the tournament should be locked in for your house agenda and restricted, and it's a triple elimination, so a slightly different format. We'll see how that plays out. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I actually joined today with a janky deck, so we'll see how that goes.
Good. I joined with something a little odd as well, so just something fun.
Yeah, that's exactly what I decided.
All right.
I figured I might not be able to play all my games, so I might as well choose something fun.
All right, John, just something I wanted to do fairly quickly now that we have the full stats for Gen Con in the annals is maybe look at it and see where we called it wrong or how wrong we were about certain houses, that kind of stuff?
Actually, I think we called it perfect. And I think what happened was people listened to us and they said, holy cow, they're right. Stark is really good. And the best way to beat Stark is to run, you know, some Lannister or Martell. And then because so many people took our good advice, we ended up with a completely skewed meta, so.
I think that's giving us far too much credit. And people were still playing Stark. They just, I mean, do you think that people chose to play less Stark simply because they thought it was going to be the flavor of the week? Is that
absolutely, yeah,
the easiest explanation there?
I think there's two things. I think, one, people don't like playing the flavor of the week because people like to be unique and different. I like to be unique and different, so I understand that. And two, they wanted to tech versus the flavor of the week. So what they did was they took houses that generally play well against Stark but might have weaknesses to other houses they didn't think would be represented, like Targ, which there wasn't a ton of. So a lot of people ended up playing Martell and Lannister, which do very well against Stark, you know. But
there actually was a fair
Targ.
Bit of Targ, though. I mean, there were 20 players playing Targ. It was more than Greyjoy.
Really? I didn't have
and,
that
and
feeling.
And more than Stark. It really, yeah, I mean, obviously when you're going through the tournament, it all looks different. But
yeah.
Essentially it was 32 Lanny, then the next most popular was 24 Martell, then 20 Targ. And to me, that's a complete reversal from the two previous tournaments where we were really seeing Stark, Targ, Greyjoy, essentially, yep, as the key points. And, you know, this both Lanny and Martell rising upwards, and I still don't know what those Lanny were doing to overcome Stark No Agenda. Because when I play that matchup, I'm still losing it. So hoping to see some more deck lists posted. But even looking at the full stats, I can't think of a convincing explanation for them.
I guess people just did what they thought would beat Stark. That's all I can think of. Like,
yeah.
I know that DC brought Lannister, and that's a good, you know, well, some of DC, the other part brought Martell, so that's probably a good 7 to 8 players that chose to bring that same Lannister deck that I know did well against Stark in their testing.
I don't know. Other point that I sort of wanted to mention is that we're getting to the point where two of the most popular agenda, in fact, after No Agenda, the two most popular agendas, are designed by Corey Fiery. There were 21 House of Dreams and 11 Darkwings Dark Words, making it the second and third place agendas at Gen Con.
And you know, even with this increased stats with people playing it, I still feel like those agendas are extremely well balanced. I think Corey and the design team that worked with him, because you know you never do these things alone, so I guess Nate and Damon and Corey designed really great agendas in there. They really took the time to make them well balanced and interesting.
Oh, I think the jury may still be out on Darkwing's Dark Words in that we're only seeing the beginning of it. But I know that, for instance, the Canadian Nationals, there was a point where I think all eight players at our table were all running either House of Dreams or Darkwing Dark Words. And you're like, there's a lot of Corey, you know, on our agenda. And he's got his art, his face space on the cards, too. So everybody's staring at Corey. Other stats that I think were kind of interesting, well, there was definitely a resurgence of Power Behind the Throne, so you weren't the only person to think that. Not only did, you know, you probably influenced both Aaron and Salim's choice, even if Salim wasn't playing exactly the same deck, but there were, I think, 9 Power Behind the Thrones? That's a prevalence that we haven't seen in a long time.
And so I guess Salim and I were the only two that made the cut at that point?
Yes. You were the only two that made the cut.
Okay. That's really interesting. I think maybe other people caught on that it was a very good matchup against Stark and many of the other houses that were prevalent at the you know, pre-Gen Con. But, of course, they were horrible matches against the other Lannister No Agendas or another Power Behind the Throne, because basically the person that gets ahead first just steamrolls because they just get all that card draw.
I always felt that the Power Behind the Throne should have said, if your opponent is not running Power Behind the Throne, then you gain this text. But in a mirror match, it should just be blank, because otherwise it just snowballs way too fast.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, I played a couple test games against other Power Behind the Throne decks, and it was every single time whoever got ahead of turn one won the game.
There's one other stat that I want to talk about, but let's keep the Power Behind the Throne in mind, because I think it's going to come up in our discussion this week. The other stat that I want to talk about is the fact that I have been able to get deck information for the number of Harrenhals being played in decks in both North American Nationals, or USA Nationals, so that's Gen Con, in Canadian Nationals, in the Battle of Blackwater Bay, and I should also be getting it for the Flea Bottom Fight in Poland. And up to date, or to date, that information is, we'll primarily talk about it in the next one, but I'm really pleased that we're able to use the annals that flexibly and go back and contact the TO and go, hey, could you give me this information for the top decks? There's a question that the community wants to answer, and that we're able to do that to some extent.
And the TOs are willing to do it, too, because I know it's a little bit extra work for them. It's awesome that they're getting back to you and giving you that information, so good on them, too.
For North American Nationals, it was FFG itself. They had all the deck lists, and I got in contact with Stuart Wilson, who runs Organized Play, and I begged him for this, and he said, look, you know, I just got back. I'll have it for you tomorrow, and he did, and I got the full stats for the annals. So thanks a lot to FFG for indulging me in my compulsions.
But it's awesome that FFG is doing that for the community and willing to work with community members to make sure the Organized Play experience is better. And, I mean, that just shows the commitment of their employees, and it's really great to see that kind of commitment, because it means we're going to just get better and better events in the future, I think.
All right, well, whenever we have a friendly, uncontroversial topic to discuss, we bring one of those people renowned for their cheerful disposition. So we're joined today by Florian Maas.
Yeah, I mean, today was an important day, too, since it was the German Nationals, and Florian decided not even to participate.
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely.
We figured it was because you didn't want to steal the thunder of the people who might win, that you're just generally being nice
exactly.
And saying, you know.
I'm just a very nice guy, and I wanted to give them the chance to participate at the great stage, because I'm obviously going to win Starlake, and it's not going to be pretty, so...
Okay, I can see that. That's very kind of you.
So the topic that I sort of wanted to touch on today, because it's really been going through a lot of the community since A Dire Message hit stores, or at least has been fully spoiled, is two cards that are really surfacing in almost every discussion, and that's Harrenhal and Wheels Within Wheels. So where would you guys like to start?
Let's start with Harrenhal, because I think it's an easy one. Because, frankly, I like that card. I think the card is it probably needs to be restricted to Melee because it's extremely prevalent. It's very good. I think it's better in Melee than in Joust. But other than that, I think, other than being a little complex at times, it's a great card. What do you guys feel?
It's also worth noting that it may be slightly simpler if we bring in that universal three times per phase limit.
I think it's perfectly fine in Joust. I think what we really need to make it kind of, at the moment it's because only aggro decks exist, that it seems kind of like it's oppressing the meta. But I think if some of the harder control decks could come back, then you would really see that it is a needed tool to deal with those decks. And I think that's actually also what it was initially designed for, to kind of break the ground against the hard control decks that can wipe your board repeatedly and you can do nothing against it.
Mm-hmm. It favors having characters on the board.
Exactly.
And then allows you to keep some of those characters on the board, essentially, in many cases.
Yeah, and it's great at freezing a game state, so once it gets ahead or if the game state's neutral, it's really good at holding that, but it's not so good at gaining you board presence or game state. You can't play Herrenhall and be like, haha, I'm winning now.
Yeah, it's not a comeback card in that sense.
Yeah, it's really a, let's keep the things the way they are and, you know, slow down your responses. I mean, there's been a poll, I don't know if you guys know this, that's up on CardGameDB. And right now, 43 people think that nothing should be done, the card's balanced. 63 thinks it needs to have a limited response or it should have to kneel to use its effect. 13 feel that it should be restricted, and 7 people think something else should be done. So, you know, there's less than, you know, 35% of the community thinks that the card's balanced like we do. So there is definitely a strong voice saying that something should be done.
I think the arguments on why things should be done, and I don't necessarily agree with them, but I do want to bring them up, is that they argue, first of all, that it's ubiquitous. And I'll touch on that in a second. And second of all, that because it exists, hard control doesn't exist in the meta. And I think that's also a fallacy.
I think that's false. I mean, we look at Gen Con, we saw a bunch of soft control decks. Why would soft control be better than hard control? It's because some of their effects are repeatable. I was running what would be termed a soft control, non-repeatable deck. I didn't have a lot of problems with Herrenhall. I was okay if they wanted to sacrifice a character instead of kneeling something out.
Well, we did see a deck in the top 16 that was running the Hatchling's Feast as it's restricted by Chris Schoenthal. We saw 2 decks using LIV2. You know, you'd think that if Herrenhall was completely meta-defining, you couldn't really rely on something like an LIV2.
The problem is that in big tournaments, some oddballs always get through. It's not like that you can say because 1 or 2 decks made the cut that is necessarily a good deck or that it is not prone to things that are maybe prevalent in the meta, because sometimes just you get lucky draws in 3 games and then your opponent has bad draws in 3 games and you get through. I know that is not very representative, but it can happen, so I think 2 or 3 is about the margin where you can still say that it has a very strong impact on the meta and that just the decks that have gotten lucky or something like that.
But let's be honest, what impacted hard control was the restricted list. When we saw Bleeds go on there with the Keep and a whole bunch of these other key pieces to the control decks, that's what hurt control. It wasn't because Herrenhall came around the corner.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you can't really say that only because a few LIV decks made it in that they're necessarily good against Herrenhall. That's not the case. It's just obviously that hard control decks have like 15 cards on the restricted list hurts them way more than Herrenhall at the moment.
So I guess the second point, so if we can't really say that there's a ton of hard control in the meta right now, but it's probably due to other reasons, is the prevalence. And it's true that a lot of people are playing Herrenhall right now. I would argue it's probably more than they should. People are slotting in, not realizing that it's a card that makes it easier to win once you're ahead, but it is not one that turns bad matchups favorable. I was able to take the stats from North American Nationals, Canadian Nationals, Battle of Blackwater Bay. I'll be getting the stats from the Fleet Bottom Freca, where I actually have the number of heron hulls used by decks in the cut and in Gen Con, even in the top 32. And it turns out that the average high-performing deck in these tournaments is running 0.94 copies of heron hull in their deck. So that means that you're likely to see, you know, people are not necessarily all running three of, desperately hoping for this card. That's only in very specific decks, and many are still choosing to run none.
I think what makes people so annoyed about Heron Hall is the fact that sometimes you create game states with it where your opponent just can't do anything anymore. And those are the games that stay in mind. Those are the games you remember, and you're like, in this subset of games that I played, I was completely locked down. Even if that is not a representing number of games, overall, you're still going to remember those very negative experiences, and that affects your judgment of the card.
Right, so it does exactly like we said it would. Basically, once someone's ahead and they play it, they can stay ahead very easily. And is that healthy for the game? Should we have cards that kind of freeze board state in that way? I don't think it, like, I think from small sample sizes, it sounds really bad, but because when you draw it and you're not ahead and you don't want to freeze the game state, it doesn't help you come back, it's not as bad as it sounds. But you're right, I think those games are the ones that are going to stick in everyone's mind every time.
Now, there is a risk, and this may segue nicely, that Heron Hall prevalence will go up. I thought that it would go down over time as people finally realize that they're throwing it in some decks where it doesn't belong. But I actually think that with the release of a dire message, at least for the moment, Heron Hall counts are going to go up in decks. And that's entirely on the backs of one particular card that we've talked about before, Wheels Within Wheels.
Yeah, this card, for those that don't know, basically lets you kneel a unique Lannister character to reveal a new plot in any phase. And, you know, the move that most people are doing right now, the really simple, really effective one, is to rule by decree your opponent after they've drawn their cards. So that they lose, you know, six cards or so. And then basically, especially in the case of a Power Behind the Throne deck, you will have no cards for turn two. And it's extremely hard for you to come back from that.
That's sort of what I wanted to mention about the Power Behind the Throne when we were talking about it in the previous segment. I'm saying, you know what, this deck just gets stronger. I mean, have you had any experience playing with this card already, Florian?
I mean, I've played against Dark Notch a few times. I've played against Rawl from the Skype group. And I have to say that the card is just, let me put it this way. You can build a strong deck without a card and then just put the card in, tweak the deck a little, do some minor adjustments, and then have a way stronger deck because you just get draws where you automatically win on turn one. It's like having a strong deck that has a chance to auto-win the game, and that's just not fair. And that was my experience. I still have this strong deck, again, and with which I can reach a good result, but I also have this chance at winning without my opponent having a possibility to stop it. And that's just very powerful, especially in a tournament setting when you can just win a certain percentage of your game just by luck. And the card just doesn't really fall off in the late game. It's still powerful if you draw it late. It's not bad if you don't draw it on the turn one. So it kind of has this mix to it that makes it very potent.
That's the thing. There are people arguing, okay, yeah, there's this, you can counting favors and then flip into rule by decree after, but then you're putting two plots that you weren't putting already, and your deck gets weaker. And what if you don't draw it? Then now all your Wheels Within Wheels are useless. And that really isn't the case. Even if we're just talking about Valor, using Wheels Within Wheels with Valor, mid-game, late-game is a phenomenal play. You wait till your opponent is marshaled, then you flip Valor, and you catch an additional wave of characters, an additional turn's worth of characters, but still get yours on the board. Or, you know, you Valor when he's not expecting it after a challenge phase went badly, but you're still going to have claim next turn. It's just, even in that situation, it's worth it.
Yeah, I saw this guy Valor me during a Fair Winter turn. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It's a very strong card. I mean, I've played against it a few times now. I've played with it a few times. All the games, if my opponent drew it, they were in a way better position than they should be from drawing any one card. And I don't think you need to fill your plot deck with stuff like counting favors that you wouldn't normally play for it to be extremely effective. Stuff just like Rule by Decree, which is a good plot by itself, really nice. You know, I saw people doing strange things like First Snow of Winter. So before challenges were declared, they would roll into First Snow of Winter after someone's marshaled a whole bunch of weenies. And that kind of surprise is just like, ooh, now I'm in big trouble because I wasn't taking this to account during, you know, normally I get to see this during the plot phase and I would have just marshaled this four cost instead of these 3, 2, and 1 cost characters. Can make huge swings.
If I can say something from the design perspective, all these plots that were designed up to this point were designed under the premise that your opponent would know what would happen, and Wheels Within Wheels breaks this, because now you take away the certainty, you take away that your opponent knows what will hit him, and that just makes all the plots way more potent, just as John just said. And it's just the fact that plots have the most innately powerful effects in the whole game that makes plot manipulation so dangerous, and that's the perfect example here.
Well, you know, there has been plot manipulation in this game, the vast majority of it limited to the plot phase, Citadel Law, Bran, etc. But there are a couple other versions, like, for instance, the Rookeries, which have to be on the board before. There has to be the, you know, a couple other versions, Bungled Orders, for instance, is plot cycling. But the most recent and most comparable effect that we can see this is Shadow's Ariane. And she hit the restricted list, and I don't think many people thought that was wrong.
Yeah,
right. And she actually had a much higher cost, gold-wise. She was a more of a tempo play than this, I think, with a Neil and unique Lannister. Lannister has a lot of cheap, small uniques. They got Janos, they got Podrick, they got...
It's like, the fact that it's at the beginning of a phase, which at least, you know, is going to affect both players somewhat more evenly.
This is true.
This being able to come out after that is just so much more.
So the same little public opinion poll that had Harrenhal also had Wheels Within Wheels. And 25 people think that it's perfectly balanced and good for the game. 72 think it should be restricted, and 29 people think something else should be done. I actually fall into the something else should be done category. I'm going to suck it up and say that this is one of the few times that I think we should modify the text on the card.
Yeah, and we should do this to me.
And we should change Wheels Within Wheels to plot phase only. You don't even have to restrict it after that. I think it's just plot phase only, and some people use it, but not most.
I hate balance errata. I mean, I'm the one who said in the Skype group, I basically said, yeah, this is how the card, you know, should have been printed, maybe, being in plot phase or something like that. But, you know, first of all, we are talking about restricting a card basically before it's seen play.
They've done that before.
They have done that before. It was met with a great deal of resistance. It may not be a great idea. But then again, I'm talking about this from the perspective of someone who's not going to play much competitively until Worlds, so I get off scot-free. I get to test it in the meta a little bit, play around with it, put in a few hard counters, but not worry about the damage it does to my tournament. But there are a lot of tournaments between now and then. There's quite a few tournaments in France that are quite important, Australian Nationals next week. I mean, quite a few of these. Can you leave something this meta-warping, or that... even that we believe is this meta-warping in the game?
I don't think so, because what it creates is basically a binary meta where you have to either play the overly powerful card or you have to play a deck that is especially built to beat this deck. And that's not a fun state to be in. And I think maybe they should wait to see, like, one tournament, maybe get some own test results in for once. That could be a thing, I guess, and then see what they can do about it, and in case of emergency, ban it until they have a better idea how to deal with it in the long term.
So I want to bring in some math, because this is what I do. So we've been talking about, for instance, using that Rule by Decree on turn one, or many of these other effects, which on turn one become much more potent. It's worth noting that if you don't even mulligan for it, if you're just playing regularly, you can expect to have about a 60% chance of finding Wheels Within Wheels after you use a, if you use a Counting Favors to try and get this combo off. And if you're going to mulligan for it, that chance goes up to about 75%.
So you That's can, if you're not playing the Maester's Path.
And if you're playing Maester's Path, it goes up to about 80%. If we
okay, but then you would have to play the Maester's Path out of Lannister, which is not a good deck.
If you start seven cards up on your opponent, it's a reasonable deck.
Yeah, almost anything works once you start seven cards up on your opponent.
If you start up on your opponent by seven cards, yeah, then everything is playable.
There will obviously be some adjustment period where if we want to play in the Octagon tournament and things like that, we're going to have to play in such a way that we expect this card. So some of the changes that I've been making to my deck, I'm now running Forgotten Plans in every single one of my plot decks.
Yep.
Because I can open with that, and that means that after the plot phase, you can't flip into even a when revealed. Well, you can, but its text will be blank. So at the very least, I can buy myself that turn so I don't get choked out of cards.
Harrenhals, more Harrenhals, more paper shields.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't like a meta that forces people to run cancel. I think cancel should be something that only certain decks want to run because they need to screen some key character or some key event that helps them win the game. But most of the time, you'd rather have an effect that does something rather than an effect that only does something if your opponent has an effect that does
something. My cancel does something. It lets me still play the game.
Well, yeah, that's the case here. There are other tricks, although they don't necessarily work very well. So one is that you could run more any phase events so that you can try and at least duck under that first turn rule by decree. You're still going to suffer Valors. And
you can't do it to Lannister anyways. I mean, if you're trying to meet Lannister on any phase events back and forth, you're in a bad place.
And then the other thing that I was thinking of is that I'm more often willing to consider pre-plot Flame Kiss or Valar turn one or something if my opponent sets up a unique Lanny and I think I can take it. And that's, you know, very rarely going to be the right play, but it's more often going to be the right play now than it was a week ago.
Yeah, I think actually that Wheels Within Wheels makes Burra probably the house that is tied for strongest house at the moment, because you have Melisandre's Scheme, which just flat out counters all the shenanigans that incorporate discard in any form. Mm-hmm. And then you also have Brightwater Meta-in-Arms and non-kneeling characters that you can drop down turn one and still have a very good board presence. You have a good deck to play Harrenhal and Paper Shields in, where Paper Shields normally are also moderately useful.
I can see that.
But I think that, you know, some of the smarter Lannisters will just start running their own Forgotten Plans to be able to stick it to these Barra players when they try to Melisandre's Schemes. And, you know, if they don't choose the right time to play it, they could just Wheels Within Wheels into it.
Yeah.
It's also worth saying, if you're running three Harrenhals or whatever, and you set one up, because you need to set it up to cancel any of these first-turn shenanigans, your opponent's probably not going to play it. Sure, he's lost some opportunity costs, but he's not going to feed you the two power yet.
But he also knows that you've hurt your board presence, right? Like,
Now, that's where the event cancels are slightly better. Your opponent doesn't know you have them, so there's a decent chance that you can get away with luring out the event. He kneels his character, you get two power, you cancel the event. So proportionally, I think this will increase the number of Harrenhals, but I think Harrenhals will be there to act as a deterrent, while if you're really expecting a lot of Wheels Within Wheels, you're going to be better off with the event cancels. So and you can't even really reliably use Seasick because your opponent will have his Seas set up turn one.
So I said what I would do to fix it. What would you do, Alex? And what would you do, Flo?
Well, as I said, maybe conduct some playtesting for once, and then if you see that the card is too strong and that the results from the tournaments are coming in and they also suggest that such thing could be true, then I would ban it. And then take enough time to consider what could we change with the card before making hasty actions. And a temporary ban is nothing bad, in my opinion. It can help to sort of figure out what to do before you start. Well, I call it the master's path chain, where you start restricting and then errata number one and errata number two and restricting all the support cards for it. As long as we get around that, I think we'll be fine. And just temporary ban or something like that, and then see how we can change the card.
My perspective, I'd actually err on the side of letting it do a little bit of damage, but not necessarily for the reasons that it's not because I hate all the tournaments between now and Worlds. I would strongly support having had this on the restricted list as of 3 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, whenever the last FAQ came out, and letting people play with it, but having it show up in the stats, essentially. If it's restricted, I will know if Lannisters are playing it anyway. And give me 3 weeks of local tournament data and other tournament data, and we start seeing that every Lannister's playing it, then we can react to that. But to me, I would start with restricting it right away, and then we can track to see if it's going to be a problem before Worlds. I suspect it will, but at least this way, we're not just outright neutering the card completely before it sees play. Because we could be wrong. We're not, but yeah, we could be.
It's possible. I've been wrong before. I called the meta at Gen Con pretty badly.
I was wrong about crossing the Mummer's Fort, so...
That I was right about.
Yes, that you were right about.
And I didn't have an opinion, so I'm fine, I guess. Win-win.
Yeah, so restrict it, and let me start tracking it in the annals, because it shows up as restricted slots.
Do we have anything else to say on these two cards?
Do you guys think of anything in particular in addition to those two cards that have been at the sort of hot ticket issues or hot button issues? I'm actually losing my grasp on the English language.
I know that, you know, people have been complaining a little bit about Daenerys Targaryen, especially when you put her in combination with things that let her participate in multiple challenges, whether that's, you know, sticking a rusted sword on her and standing her with locations, or using Cal so that she can participate in not kneel in a power challenge.
Yeah, I think Dany is definitely getting restricted because she just does exactly the same thing as Usher has done before, and that is that she's just too good out of house. Because, for example, in Lannister, Power Beyond the Throne, you play her because you can play Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Then in Targaryen, she's an auto-include. She's like two times or three times in every Targaryen deck. And then you have... And now it has even started that they start playing her in Greyjoy because she has 4 strength, an intrigue icon, and 5 cost is reasonable. And now you have the task plot. The traitor's task or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one.
You can search her up. That's like... That's the third house where she is getting played, and two houses gratefully pay the addition of 2 costs for this character. So I think that's worthy of restriction.
I may disagree. I think there's no doubt that she is stupidly powerful and that she's restriction worthy. However, I think she's sort of falling into a place, at least from the interview we saw with Damon, where they kind of wanted there to be a default Dany that you were going to use unless you specifically wanted, you know, the Dragon one or some other niche one. And this one does fit the bill. But also, we haven't really seen Targaryen's fortunes rise drastically on the backs of this Dany yet. So I do think the out-of-house issue is a big one. And I think that that certainly does matter, and that it'll probably wind up with the Asha treatment for exactly the same reasons. I don't think that it's something that necessarily needs to be done for balance issues, just more for consistency's sake.
I mean, you can also just change the card text and put House Targaryen only on it. What's your opinion on that, Alex?
I think, you know, in my opinion, you could also change it to make it a limited response, or you could change it to make it... You know, but. My opinion on all of those would be about the same. They would have been intelligent at the time the card was printed. I don't agree with adding them afterwards.
Yeah. So I think if we don't want to ratter her, she probably does need to move towards the restricted list at some point because of her power level. She should be right there next to the Red Viper.
That's the other point. Yeah, the Viper's not there. So, and it's certainly of comparable power. But yeah, I don't think that Dany has necessarily warped the meta, though.
No.
I don't think the health of the game depends on restricting Dany.
But
mostly because the characters are much easier to control.
Neither did the health of the meta depend on Asha's restriction. It wasn't that bad.
No, Asha's restriction actually surprised me when it did come around. But I could see some justification as well, because if you make Greyjoy too fast, then the fact that they have a terrible card draw is completely offset. So I could see even there that it was playing counter to the theme that they have sort of built out for Greyjoy.
Yeah, but Daenerys is playing counter to the theme of Targaryen as well. Like, they're supposed to have trouble with big fat armies because they can burn the little guys, and then Dany is the solution to that.
Yeah.
Flawless logic. Yeah. Restrict, please, FFG.
But I'm not calling for Dany to be restricted either. I want to see wheels within wheels fixed. I want to see Harrenhal and Melee. And other than that, I find the meta is very healthy. I can understand if they do decide to restrict Dany. I mean, I think their justification would be there, but if they do that, they better put the Red Viper on the list.
I do have one restriction I'd like to propose. And this is one that I hold quite dear to my heart. I think that players with the name John should be restricted.
Why? Don't you do better than them in every single tournament but one ever gone to?
If we look at the history of North American champions and world champions, we have John Brunos, we have Jonathan Andrews, we have...
Jonathan Benton.
Jonathan Benton, that's right. We have far too many Johns overperforming, and I think if we just restricted Johns so they couldn't run a restricted card, the people with names that don't start with J would have a chance.
The problem is also that you can't really restrict John, because where does John start and where does John end? Is it only John without an H, or is it also John with an H? And
No, you restrict it by phonetic spelling.
Is it Jonathan? Okay. Can we do Johan?
So we have to consult
Nick?
Tagore every time we want to figure out whether a player is restricted.
Okay, that was bad. And we're done on that.
Okay, well, thank you, Florian, for joining us.
But before you go, Florian, please give us a snappy sign-off.
Snappy sign-off? What comes to mind? Yeah, I take that.
It's my snappy sign-off. All right, let's do that. All right, well, we can't quite end on that note. We do have a few announcements and a few comments that I want to make. First of all, I'm now recording this. I did get more information out of the Dijon Open. So the winning deck was a target, Heir to the Iron Throne. Secondly, I sort of want to chat about a bit of an apology that basically we all agreed on this discussion about the cards that should be restricted and why. It may not have made for the most engaging podcast, but... You know, we really do feel quite strongly, and we all do seem to agree on that, on those issues. Furthermore, there are two notable tournaments coming up this next week. One of them is Australian Nationals, which we have at least one past guest of the show attending. And there's also a local tournament I heard about in Porto, in Portugal. So hopefully we'll get results out of those and see how the meta is evolving.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.